I'm texting.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 458, recorded on February 23rd, 2017. Welcome to the 458th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 291st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Fowl.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and in gaming history. So, before we get into what have we been playing, PAX East is 2 weeks from now, but I went to a different convention this past weekend, and that is Toy Fair in New York. And I'm going to tell you, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's for girls and little kids, but the sheer variety made it fun. I mean, the outdoor toys, the indoor toys, and of course there were board games. And I happened to visit I forgot the name of the developers who were doing this stupid thing. Steamforged. I did have it right. Steamforged Games. They had a booth there. And TJ, you might find this interesting. You probably already know about it, but I got some hands-on time with Dark Souls, the board game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So it's going to be $120 when it's released. It has a lot of big figurines and small figurines. It comes with five classes, and it is pure Dark Souls, all the weapons, all the monsters. I'm going to be posting a video of a run-through of boss battles. Basically, all the minions, you know, the not-great ones have very predictable pattern, but each of the major bosses, you flip over a card, and they go in that order, and it always goes in that order until they're half health, and then they go into a frenzied mode, and they add a special frenzied card, and then you have to shuffle them, and that order, that pattern which you had to memorize is now jumbled up, and you have to figure out the new pattern. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure in Dark Souls, that's mainly what you're doing is the patterns of these bosses.
Yeah, that sounds about right, and it sounds about right with the minions. The minions all have a pattern and a place that they all sit at all the time.
Yeah,
and I guess my only question, and don't say it if it's a spoiler, but how many times did you die and lose everything?
We didn't die, but I could tell that the major bosses are extremely difficult. And you could up the – see, it's a co-op game, right? When you die, you go back to the – I forgot what they called it, the light, or – you probably know the answer to this better than I. When you die in Dark Souls, where do you go?
Bonfire.
Right, yeah, you go to the bonfire. That's what I was thinking of. And you can do it at any difficulty. You can even do it solo, one single player, one hero going in, which is probably Dark Souls at its hardest level in the video game. That's what this is. Yeah.
Is there any dice, though, in the game?
Oh, yeah, there are dice. And depending on the armor and the weaponry you have, affects it. For example, say the major boss is going to do one of his attack moves, and you're the is it the knight? Not the herald. The herald is the one that can just take a lot of damage. I think it was the knight who has some dexterity, or no, the fighter. He gets, depending on his armor and his skills, he gets two white dice, and you have to get a certain amount of dodge points in order to avoid getting hit. And if you get hit by five, here's the thing. A lot of your actions can cause stamina, and you can also take damage. And when those two meet, you die.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to tell you something. Like this was a Kickstarter project. They were looking for $1 million. They raised $9 million.
Nice.
That's impressive. Is this coming out of
It's coming out in a few weeks. And yeah, I think it's coming out in a few weeks, in March, I think. March 17th, maybe. I don't remember the exact release date. But if you're a Dark Souls fan, you will want this game. It doesn't matter if it costs $120. You will want this game. They also will be releasing expansions to it. You know, new monsters with their own abilities, new classes. They don't have a magic class yet. They intend to add one as one of the first releases. Okay. And I'm going to tell you something. This is going to be the sort of thing that you're going to be addicted to with your friends who are really into Dark Souls, even if they're not into Dark Souls.
I'm already thinking about my friends and how he could get a game on this setup.
I'm going to tell you something. Go to their Kickstarter page. The reason why it's going to cost so much is that it's being produced in the UK. But like I said, if you look at it, you're going to go, wow. And you're going to say, how did they not think of this a few years ago? Because the thing is that as someone who doesn't play Dark Souls, but I do play co-op games, I can see various influences, but I haven't seen yet a tactical combat game that requires you to think. I mean, you can get new equipment, you can upgrade your equipment and all that sort of stuff. A game comprised of you going through several levels before you hit the big boss. So yeah, I mean, this game really impressed me. There's a lot of great games. They had a game that that uses an iPad, but it's also a physical game in which you run through escape room scenarios. No, I'm saying Paul would probably love that, since he admitted that he goes to 80 escape room things in Florida every month. You know, it's like, I guess escape rooms are becoming the thing right now.
Yeah, we just had one open up near us, too. Actually, we've had a couple, one in my actual town and then one down south of us in San Antonio.
Where do you guys hear about these places? I have not heard.
They have them plastered up on billboards. Like they advertise.
Or you just go online.
I haven't seen a single thing about it.
Wait, you're in Texas, right?
I am.
Oh wait, no, Scott, where are you? I know you're in the Midwest somewhere.
I'm in Florida.
Oh, you're in Florida? Well, then just ask Paul. That's where he is right now. Paul knows where all the.
Paul doesn't even friend me on Skype, so I don't know.
Oh, I'll tell him to friend you. Anyway, so other than that, I haven't been playing much. But I just started playing Limbo. I know it's 7 years old by now, and you know, but I've been getting some of the rarer achievements for knocking out eggs from various spots. So, I mean, I know all about Limbo. You don't have to tell me how great Limbo is, and I already know that his sister is dead, or he is dead, or whatever you want to, whatever interpretation you want for the
ending.
Thanks
for the spoiler.
The name of the development company is Playdead. They spoiled it right there in their name. It's a 7-year-old game. If you didn't know by now, here's the thing: I can't really spoil it because everything's open to interpretation. You know?
Yeah. There's definitely some dark things going on, but it is the kind of thing where it's like really, really vague at the same time.
Now, I haven't played Inside.
Did you say you were going to play Inside?
I want to play Inside. I haven't played it yet, so that don't spoil for me because I know the ending for that game is supposed to be batshit and crazy. So I'm going. I've also been playing a lot of Plants vs. Zombies. As a matter of fact, they have a new community goal right now to get 30 million people killed by explosions, by beans or whatever like that, in the next 3.5 days. They're already up to 4 million, I believe. At 5 million, there's a tier reward, and at 10 million, there's a tier reward, and 30 million is the final reward. I already did my part. Oh, let's see. The 5 million, I believe, is just coinage, a lot of coins. Mm. The 10 million is something. It says something about something blue, some blue object. I'm guessing it's maybe a new class of thing. I don't know. The 30 million is a rare buff. You know, so we'll see about it. I mean, it's fun to have these community things. Like back with Mass Effect 3, they had one that honored Robin Sachs, who passed away a week ago. And they estimated it should take more just over a weekend, and they completed the community goal in 4 hours.
Mm.
People really loved Robin Sachs, who played Zaid Masani in the game. So that's basically what I've been playing. But I'm going to tell you something. You know, I am keeping a side eye on Dark Souls, the board game. I mean, even though it's $120, I may pick it up. Or you know what? I could actually tell Steamforge, I'm covering your game. Give me a free copy. I'll do that. Yeah. But anyways, what have you been playing, TJ? I wonder if my telling you about Dark Souls, the board game, is going to make you want to play a little more Dark Souls.
I was staring at the board game. I'm not going back to Dark Souls. Not for now. I've got Neo, so that'll cover me for Dark Souls for the time being.
Have you checked out the board game yet?
I was looking over it a little bit while we were talking.
Looks really cool, doesn't it?
It looks great.
Yeah.
Like, I love the miniatures that they have with it. They look awesome.
Yeah, and it might be one of those games like Star Wars. What's the name of that Star Wars miniatures game with the ships? Star Wars Rebellion, something like that. Because people just keep on collecting more and more spaceships for that game, because it's a tactical game in which you put the ships on the board and all that stuff. So I'm pretty sure, you know, Dark Souls may have a chance at having a real. You know, what would be really funny is if you have Dark Souls the action game turned into a board game, and then you have a computer game adaptation of the board game.
Yeah.
Hey, look, you know, they can do it with Deus Ex Go and Hitman Go, and this is sort of like in that realm, although it's not, you know, I'm just saying, this could easily become go ahead, Scott.
Dark Soulsception, you know, like game within a game within a game.
I'm just saying, you know, the board game has its own rules, and it's a lot more tactical. I mean, in Dark Souls, you have a lot of action, so you have a lot of timing, right? In Dark Souls, the board game, it's more strategic, and those patterns you have to figure out. And you have to say, listen, I'm going to take this damage, but you have to go over on the other side of him, because we know that the next attack is going to be – he's going to be vulnerable from behind. That sort of thing, you know, sort of like a lot of coordinating going on. And like I said, since it's a co-op game, you could actually play alone with four characters and control them all yourself.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a board game.
I mean, it's a lot more fun to argue with your friends, but, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing about co-op games is that when you screw up, everybody either lays blame or just shrugs and say, okay, let's try this again. Anyways, you were saying, TJ.
Okay, so,
You said you were playing Neo. Are you still playing Neo?
Of course I'm still playing Neo. I love that game. Okay. It's awesome. And it's like Dark Souls in the way that you got a lot of different weapon styles and character builds you can do. So I've actually started two playthroughs, one that I'm playing when my wife has time to watch, and one that I'm just sort of doing on my own. And I'm doing like you take up two different weapon styles that you're specialized in when you do a playthrough. So on one I'm doing specialized in like sword and spear, while on the other one I'm doing dual swords and Kusarigama, which is the sickle on the chain with the weight on the end. And the drastic style difference is awesome. I love it. It's so – like every weapon has its own move list that you can like get skill points and unlock new moves for, and I really enjoy that. I really enjoy like that sort of Ninja Gaiden had that kind of style with it, where you got the weapons and then you upgraded them gradually. I really enjoy that. But,
is this the one in which you can bow in front of something instead of fighting them?
Yes, there are certain monsters that don't actually have malicious intent, and if you do a certain gesture that they like, then they'll just disappear, give you their treasure, and you don't have to fight them.
Like the living walls.
It's like Undertale.
Yeah, they're living. I saw someone bow to a living wall, and it just bowed back, and then it vanished. And there was it was a secret door hiding a little treasure room.
The funny thing is that not all of them respond to respectful gestures. Sometimes you have to be an asshole to the wall, and then it will go. And sometimes if you're friendly to the wall, it will crush you. So it changes it up, and like sometimes the only way you can know is that there's gravestone. There's like bloody graves, like where other players died in a certain area, and you might see one near the wall that was said, "This guy was crushed by the wall for his friendly behavior." And it's just, wow. And it's really
sort
funny
like
to see
Demon
messages
Souls
like
right
that.
There. That's Demon Souls stuff.
Yeah, but the other one I've been playing this week, and the one that I really enjoyed like a lot, was I got a chance to review Psychonauts and the Rhombus of Ruin, which is a VR game.
Oh yeah.
for the PS4, and that was fun. It was what were you about to say?
I just said that's sweet. That's awesome.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's set right after the events of the, like immediately after the events of the first game. So like Raz has become a psycho, has just become a psychonaut. Certain person has been kidnapped and the team is off to go save him.
Well, anybody who saw the end of Psychonauts knows that's, and it's, here's the thing. That's basically how Psychonauts 2 launches off. So I'm pretty sure you're playing the opening segment of Psychonauts 2.
Sort of. This sets up some things that you might, that are easily going to happen in Psychonauts 2. It feels like a side episode and, it was really fun. It's a puzzle-solving game. It takes place from a first-person perspective of Raz, but you use his psychic powers to navigate rooms and like use it and interact with the environment.
Yeah, they have all the original voices, by the way, doing Psychonauts 2, which is nice.
Oh yeah, and I love hearing Sasha 9 again. He's my favorite character in that whole series.
No, the room is better.
Yeah, they brought all the voices back. So Sasha, I forgot what her name. Who is the groovy chick? I can't remember her name right now.
His girlfriend. Well, she's not his girlfriend at the beginning. Agent 9 and Agent. Oh, dear God. Agent 9, the agent. Because we know Ford Crawler is there.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot, I'm trying to remember her friggin' name. Because here's the thing, I've played it about a billion times, and now it's not Flora. It's Coach Oleander, Dr. Lobato, Sasha 9.
Yeah, it drove me crazy, too.
And, you know, she's the most pathetic, because she's a psychic who is in charge of a boarding school, and there was a fire. And she psychically heard all of them screaming as they were killed in the fire.
Yeah.
How's that make her pathetic?
What?
It haunts her. And it's not so much that she's pathetic. How's that make her pathetic? So much as it makes her.
Here's the thing. She's overly perky, which is overcompensating for that pain that she has.
Yes, obviously.
Mila Vidal,
and she never got over it, and she doesn't get over it. She never doesn't ever get over it. She just is sad that Raz found that out about her. You know, she says she wishes that he'd never visited that part of her level.
Yeah, I don't say that she's pathetic so much as like she's one of the most tormented and ridiculously sad characters in the game, and it's sort of a curveball they throw at you.
Yes, it was.
But
Sasha 9 his father cheated on his mother, which is he's reminded of it because of the tacky lamp that was in the room while they were doing it. Yeah, and that's why he doesn't like tacky things, because his father was fucking some other woman in the same room with him as a tacky lamp.
That's a pretty tacky thing to do.
Yeah, and I will say that you get your own little revelation. You do a little mind jump in Rhombus of Ruin, and you get to find out about somebody else. And it is a moment that's like, oh dear, that is unfortunate.
The world shall taste my eggs.
But yeah, Rhombus of Ruin, only about a 4 to 6 hour game, not incredibly long, but a good puzzle solving romp. And oh God, I was happy to be back in the Psychonauts universe for something new.
Well, I can't wait to meet Tim at E3. We can't wait to meet Tim at E3. Like I explained to everybody, I backed the friggin' thing for $810 on Fig. That's the only thing I'm ever gonna back that much for. My previous record was, I think, $127 for Pillars of Eternity.
And speaking of Pillars of Eternity,
that's you're still what playing
I've
that.
Been playing.
Still getting ready for Pillars of Eternity 2, huh?
Yes, Pillars of Eternity 2 is on its last day for backing on Fig, and I backed it for the Elite Special Edition with the Odinua statue, and I'm really glad to get that one. That's a really good It looks like the concept that they have for it looks really good. And they've gotten, so far, last time I checked, they have 3.75 million, and they had only asked for 1.1 billion. So they are.
Billion? Really billion? Good. With a B? Oh, wow. No, that's a bit much.
Billion.
I said billion. I know. I'm busting your chops.
They really are making their money on that one.
Let me see how much they originally raised for the first Pillars of Eternity. The first one, I'm looking it up right now.
I think it was 3.4, something like that.
Yeah, hold on. Oh, damn it. You know, I should be able to see this because I backed it. Oh, I backed it for $140. It was 3.98 million.
Okay.
They were asking for 1.1 million. So, yeah, that was one of the big successes from a major studio. You know, from
yes, a major developer. Very big success. And I'm liking the concepts that they're doing for Pillars 2, because now you're going from like a land-based game to a water-based game where you get to have a ship and you're sailing around with your own like custom ship, and you can model it, change it around to, you know, customize it, and you can outfit your ship with cannons, and it has special abilities, you know, depending on what you level up. So I think this will be a very interesting and different spin for this, because usually you're on the land combing the countryside, and now you'll be in the ocean discovering islands and finding different quests and dealing with a walking god. That too.
Pillars of Eternity, Wind Waker.
I should wash your mouth. That was soap.
Wait, what is wrong with the Wind Waker? Why do you have this? Legend of Zelda Wind Waker was perfectly fine.
Well, I don't know. You don't like it?
You thought it was boring, or?
I just felt like it was aimed at a very young audience and not me, and I don't know. There's just nothing. I couldn't take it serious.
You know, I'm finally going to get to play Tides of Numenera next week. You have early access though, right?
Yes, I have it online.
Have you played it, or are you waiting for the final version?
I did play it. I'll play it some more once I'm done with Pillars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to finish the game and then move on to another one after I've completed this one.
You know, that makes me think a little bit, Pillars of Eternity 2, what they've got going on with it. Makes me think a little bit of one of the Suikodens. I think the fourth one. Suikoden 4.
Yeah, it was the fourth one, yes. You're right. That's when they were out in the ocean, and they had a big sailing massive ship, but they only had like 5 or 6 islands.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot to explore.
Yeah. I think the idea of like having that sort of... I like customizing. I like pirate ships. That's one thing. Yes. I love the idea of being able to customize one.
You should check it out. I mean, if you don't mind isometric games too much, you know, this might tickle your interests. They have recurring characters from the previous game coming back. Just 3 of them: Idir, Pelagina, and Aloft. And they have new ones that they're introducing, and they're like latest, like the final stretch goal they want to try to is 5 million, so they can add this Yedwin character as a full-on character, because they also have sidekick characters. And it's really crazy all the stuff they're going to be putting into this game. They have this relationship mechanic where it's not necessarily romance. It could be just good friendship or people that despise each other, and it's between the characters, not just you as well. So there might be romances and friendships for all the characters all around. So you make it a little bit more balanced story and not just all the focus on you as the watcher.
So this is a direct sequel.
Yes.
Do you think there's going to be is there any like interlock where it might take a save that you had in the first game and
yes,
recognize some of the choices you made?
You can import your save, but but I think they also give the option to just start Pillars 2 without importing. And they'll probably be – I feel like Adir is going to be talking to you about the story of what they did. And then you just like – it'll be like KOTOR 2 where they're like kind of quizzing you on, okay, you know, just answer this, 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 and okay, we did that, or we did this, and, you know, and oh, you did that to Aeloth and or whatever. So you'll get the story that you want if you want to do it that way. But I like importing saves, and I know that that is definitely an option. But cool. One of the things they are doing also is that – when Eos takes control of the Ognua statue and comes out, he nearly kills you and drains some of your soul. So you're actually left at level 1 and your castle is annihilated and, you know, like just leaves you for dead. And so you're kind of recovering and chasing after him. And you start at level 1 because they're also doing a multi-class thing where you can do multiple levels of different classes and combine them, and you get this other special class. Like if you combine, if I remember right, Druid and Wizard, you get Shaman. If you combine Paladin and Cleric, you get like Crusader or something like that. It's crazy. It's like they've put so much into this. It seems like it's going to be huge. It feels like
so. We're going to move on to news. There's not much news this week. Some interesting news. The first news item is Square Enix may have accidentally announced Nier Automata. Oh, damn it. See, I knew I was going to make a mistake. Square Enix may have accidentally announced Nier Automata's PC release date. This comes to us from Destructoid. And this, you were talking about how much you love Neo, and I'm wondering how you're going to react to this one, TJ. The highly anticipated Nier Automata, it will release on PlayStation 4 in North America on March 7th, 2017. It'll also be available on PC via Steam, but the release date has yet to be announced, or has it? Square Enix released a new trailer entitled Arsenal of Elegant Destruction that shows off combat, and originally displayed a March 10th, 2017 release date for the PC. They have since removed the video and re-uploaded it with only the PS4 release date displayed. Gamatsu had the original video uploaded. Just why they removed the date is still unknown. The PS4 release date is March 10th, so it is possible they made a mistake regarding these dates. I know why. Because they want to make it seem like you can't get anywhere except the PS4. It's an agreement with Sony. You know, they have to make it sound like only on PS4, nowhere else. You don't know when it's going to be on PC.
What kind of game is this, Nier Automata?
It's an action hack and slash.
Yeah, okay. The first one was released on the Xbox 360 a long time ago, and it was ported to PS3, and it got mixed reviews. I mean, they liked certain parts of it, you know, so this is the eventual evolution of that concept.
Yeah, it's something that I know it has a following. It seems like a cult following, if anything. It's one of those things that I never got around to or made time for, but people have been ridiculously excited for Automata, and I don't know that I understand why.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. but something I did notice earlier, which is also a Square Enix story, is that they announced a new RPG called Project Prelude Rune, and there's not much to say about it other than that it's an RPG that's coming out from Square Enix that's a totally new IP that has nothing to do with Final Fantasy, you know, and I think they have concept art of the battle or of combat. So I guess it's kind of a live action RPG on those things. So, I mean, that's what I'm waiting to see more on.
Did you ever play Nier and Jonah?
I gameflied it, and it didn't leave much of an impression on me, except for the fact it was open world, and the main character had a lot of personality. That's what I remember most. He was always if I remember correctly, but he was always quipping. He was always, you know, talking about this and that. You know, it's like one of those modern day snarkers in a medieval setting, lampshading what he had to do. It was fun enough. It wasn't a bad game. It wasn't going to knock people's socks off, but apparently it was enough for people to, you know, to really get into the character. I think another part of the excitement is that it's a PS4 exclusive. I mean, they'll, even if a game is crap, people will get excited if it's an exclusive.
Hmm. Maybe so. Because, like, I don't remember Nier ever making enough of an impression for people to be so hyped for a sequel to happen. But, I mean, if that's what people are excited about. I'm not going to be one to knock people because I love Guilty Gear, and I don't think that I know many people that many other people that do.
I think part of it is that it has a really big Japanese fan base now.
Ah. That could be. So sort of a Fire Emblem thing going on.
Yeah, basically. Like I said, I don't remember much about it except for the fact it was open world. Kind of goofy. With weird combat.
Hmm.
Anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead.
Ed Boon would entertain the possibility of Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat crossover. From IGN. NetherRealm Studios creative... I'm sorry. NetherRealm Studios creative director Ed Boon recently spoke to the possibility of a Mortal Kombat vs. Street Fighter game, noting that while there would be many hurdles to overcome, if Capcom approached him about a crossover, he'd have to entertain it. Quote, there's a part of me that's like, that would be such a cool dream. And then there's another part of me that goes, there's no way that would satisfy everybody, Boon said on IGN Unfiltered. The Mortal Kombat co-creator went on to explain that even if the game was rated M and they could really tear Ryu's head off, it would still be difficult to make a successful crossover because of how differently the two games play. There's different pacing, quote, there's different pacing, there's different fundamentals with both of them, Boon explained. He also cited Street Fighter X Tekken as an example of how with a fighting game crossover, one of the licenses is going to have to sacrifice something. And in the case of Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter, he said, quote, I don't know if we'd be able to find that sweet spot. When asked how he would respond if Capcom called tomorrow with an offer to have NetherRealm develop a Street Fighter Mortal Kombat crossover, he said he'd have to entertain it, noting they'd probably do a whole ton of research with Street Fighter players to learn what they would want from the game. Given how Street Fighter and Tekken worked out, I'm curious yet nervous about something like that. I don't know if you guys remember, but the Street Fighter Tekken thing was a debacle of A, DLC that was put on the disc but not released, and
oh, B, I remember that.
Yeah, and B,
Tekken X Street Fighter never came out. And that's the way they did it, is that, okay, this is the Street Fighter style with Tekken characters in it, and the Tekken version was supposed to be this Tekken style with Street Fighter characters in it.
Yeah, and, like...
Here's the thing about Street Fighter. It is a very cel-shaded game, even with the 3D stuff that it has now. To make it work would be, you'd have to have it really fast-paced, and with a lot of combos and also combo breakers. That's what Street Fighter is all about, combos and combo breakers. Mortal Kombat sort of goes by that, but they're more about the spectacle. You know, they're more about spectacle. They're more about big flashy moves, you know, maybe juggling occasionally, you know, and finishing moves. So I think those two would meld better than most others would. I mean, you couldn't meld, say, Street Fighter with Virtua Fighter.
Right. I think, okay, so having played Mortal Kombat X and having played Street Fighter V, I can say that the big difference for me is that Street Fighter V is very methodical and slow in comparison. Mortal Kombat X is frenetic in its pace, and I think that you could bump up the speed of Street Fighter, but it would almost feel jarring to have to pull off those moves that much quicker.
Well, Street Fighter players are pixel counters. You change one pixel, they'll know about it.
Right. And that's another thing about the Mortal Kombat moveset is that because of how fast it goes, some of the moves are a little bit more simplified than, say, a Street Fighter setup where you just, like, press straight up, right down, punch, and that's a move, as opposed to doing the whole, like, drag and punch sort of down diagonal forward thing. It's just a matter of speed. It's a matter of these are the kind of things you have to do when your game is as fast as Mortal Kombat X is.
I think it would be easier to turn it into a Street Fighter game with Mortal Kombat characters, because for the most part, you know, Mortal Kombat players are basically going to care about the fatalities more than anything else. So if you're playing Street Fighter and you still get to rip off Ryu's head, but instead of it, it's going to be a cel-shaded Sub-Zero who pulls out his head with his spine attached, you know, they won't care if the combat is a little different. Street Fighter is a tournament game for a reason.
Mm-hmm. And I think to a certain extent too, it's always an issue of business with Capcom. That's why the DLC problem came up. That's why Tekken versus Street Fighter never came out. And it's just, I don't know. Capcom has some of the same issues that Nintendo does sometime with connecting with their audience and figuring out what actually is good for business. Which, I mean, if it was Capcom's way, they would release a different version of the same game for 10 years straight.
You mean Capcom is the Image Comics of video game developers? Let's release 5 different covers of Youngblood. All of them suck, but who cares? Give to the Youngblood's disease a charity.
Yeah, no, given the fact that Street Fighter has been out for almost an entire year, I'm surprised there hasn't been a Super Street Fighter V yet.
Super Street Fighter or Turbo. Turbo XXX. Super Street Fighter Extreme. Turbo. No, Super Street Fighter Turbo EX +++.
Yeah.
To the extreme.
No, it's part of the title, though. I mean, I don't think they've ever had something like that. It's always been Turbo or Super Street Fighter Extreme Turbo +++. That's something they would do. You know, for whatever reason, that makes me want to play Super Puzzle Fighter right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And try and play as Dan. So we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2, too big for Switch Drive. This is from The Guardian. While other console manufacturers have dutifully stuffed their consoles with ever more expansive hard drives, the Kyoto-based veteran has always been somewhat penurious with storage.
Penurious. I don't know why they use that word. Let's just change that to stingy.
Yeah, stingy. its next release, the Switch, contains only 32 gigabytes of internal memory. I have flash cards, little USB drives that are bigger than that. It's just ridiculous. Internal memory around 4 gigs of which is reserved for operating system. Sure, this probably keeps the manufacturing costs down, but it presents a problem. This week, the official Japanese Switch page revealed a host of forthcoming titles together with their file sizes. One, a double pack featuring Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2, comes in at 32 gigabytes, which means if you buy the digital version from Nintendo eShop, it won't fit on your console. So insert facepalm here. There are some mitigating factors here. Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2 collects two full-size PlayStation releases into one package, so it's on naturally large proposition. The file sizes for other games were mostly around 1 to 5 gigabytes, with Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild coming at 13 gigabytes. Also, unlike the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, the Switch doesn't demand that physical games are installed onto the hard drive before you can play. So if you buy a box copy of Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2, you won't have any issues. But if you do plan on making a lot of eShop purchases on your new machine, you're going to have to buy a micro SD card for extra storage space. A 120 gigabyte card comes at around $35.
$35.
$45.
It's $45. They said 30, yeah, sorry. 35 pounds, $45, yeah.
Yeah, 35 pounds, 45 U.S., sorry. Of course, Nintendo watchers shouldn't be surprised when the Wii U first launched. It had two iterations, a basic machine with a mere 8 gigs hard drive storage and a premium version with a mere 32 gig hard drive storage. Before this, the original Wii didn't even have a hard drive, just 512 megabyte of internal flash memory and, yes, another SD card slot. To begin with, Wii users weren't even able to download digital games. That's right, you couldn't. To directly to the card, and wasn't until 2008 that Nintendo announced it would make that possible. We have to address the console's insufficient memory storage, said the president Satoru Iwata.
At the time.
So no foresight at all. There is no confirmed release for Dragon's Quest Heroes 1 and 2 outside of Japan. However, in games industry where lots of the most interesting games are coming from independent developers who are limited to digital distribution by the need to keep costs low, it could prove annoying. The Switch is set to be launched with no bundled software, a move designed to keep the retail price low, but the purchasers need to buy a game and an SD card. The costs are rising. And yeah, I just feel like this is very poor planning all together.
Oh, another related news, by the way, from GameStop saying that we're going to have very limited supplies of the Switch. So Nintendo's going to try that trick of, hey, look, there's not enough, so you better buy it because it's like a toy. And people want to buy what they don't have, right?
Yeah, that's getting awful.
I'm still going to wait until summer. I hope that it's still, working by then.
Did you see where Sterling was showing off the two? I think it's like 2 foot, no, 1 foot, or ridiculously small cord for the Nintendo for the mini NES. It's like 2 feet. fortunately, at Toy Fair they had a mini NES with a 10 foot cord and also a wireless controller, which you could also use to turn on and off the console without having to go to it, which is actually kind of neat. You know, you can do that with other consoles.
Yeah,
but if you have a mini NES, yeah. I mean, if you have a mini NES and you don't want to have to get up and turn it off, you can just say, okay, it's off now.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. As for the Switch, I mean, they're obviously trying to get this out the door. They're in a hurry. I don't know if it's because they're trying to beat the – seems like everybody's trying to beat the Xbox Scorpio to the street, but I don't know if it matters. I mean,
here's the thing.
Nintendo,
wait a minute.
Nintendo shouldn't even worry about competing with Xbox. People that are getting Xboxes are never going to buy a Nintendo Switch ever.
Well, no, that's not true. What I'm saying is that the Nintendo Switch is going after a different audience. Now, people who own a Scorpio may want to buy a Switch because – you know, they see something, you know, they like on it when the cost goes down, you know. I mean, you can't assume that everybody's only going to buy one console. But you're right. The Switch and the Scorpio and the PlayStation 4 have their own audiences. Even the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, even though they share the same third-party support, they still have two different audiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're more subtle.
It's not a lot of people – not a lot of people can buy multiple consoles, though, or have the time to play multiple consoles.
Although I will say this, you know, I might buy a Wii U for like $50 to play Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. I wasn't saying that Nintendo was going after Xbox or Sony's audience so much as it just seems like it seems like they're in a hurry. It seems like everybody's in a hurry to move the next generation.
Wow, because remember what Miyamoto said, you know, a bad game is bad forever. They can say the same thing about a console.
Look at the Wii U, and that's exactly the problem.
I mean,
I hope it.
Go ahead, teacher.
I hope it eventually gets there, but obviously the starting setup is going to be, I mean, it's going to leave a bit to be desired. It's what it's looking like.
Yeah, here's the problem with Nintendo right now. They can't afford another loss. The Wii U was a disaster. They can't have two bad consoles in a row and expect to survive. I mean, the GameCube was not a disaster, but it stumbled badly out of the gate. You know, unlike the Nintendo 64, which had a huge thing out of the gate, but then it just died. It just, where are the games? You know, the GameCube had a really impressive library at the end of its life, but
I think where the Switch is going to make the difference is the fact that it is definitely the hybrid console mobile option that they were always selling it as.
You know, the problem with that, though, is Nintendo has never been good at innovating. I mean, they were the first out of the gate with virtual reality, remember? Mm-hmm. How'd that do?
They eventually made it to the 3DS, so
that's not virtual reality. That's not virtual reality. The Virtual Boy, baby.
Oh, yeah.
And their Game Boy was monochrome color, and it took innovation does take a long time with Nintendo. They took forever to get off of cartridges onto CDs and then to digital, and just they're very slow, and it's very frustrating.
And do you know why? You know why the Game Boy, the original Game Boy, beat out the Lynx?
Or was the Game Gear? I wasn't aware that it did beat it out.
The Game Gear and the Lynx couldn't compete with the Game Boy for one reason and one reason alone: battery life. And I'm going to tell you, if they expect to, the Switch to be a hybrid, being able to play Breath of the Wild for an hour and a half to 2 hours ain't going to cut it as a handheld. And yeah. If it's a handheld, hopefully it's not going to be a crippled console.
It needs to make it way through the plane ride up until I can get to the hotel room and hook up my stuff again.
Let me correct myself. It is a crippled console because of its storage space.
I was looking on Amazon, and the Wii U for 32 gigabytes Mario Kart is $387.
That's ridiculous.
Where are you finding a $50 one?
When the Switch comes out, the Wii U is. Oh, you know, I bet you I can find a used Wii U for $50 someplace. Maybe on eBay. You know, I doubt the Wii U is that expensive. Although, you know what? I'm wondering if the prices are going to go up because people are going to say, "Oh, I can't buy the Switch. Might as well get a Wii U to play Breath of the Wild."
Well, the other thing is that people they stopped production on the Wii U, and that drove the price up a little bit because now it's quote unquote a collector's item.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but something's not a collector's item right after.
Yeah, I'm seeing all these Wii U's on Amazon at $300 and $400. There's a Wii U Deluxe Set Super Mario 3D World at $479.
No one's gonna buy that. No one's gonna buy it. You just have to be a little patient. I remember when the Wii U first came out, it was on eBay for $400-$500, and no one bought them.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's certainly not worth that much.
No, I mean I could go to GameStop. Go to GameStop, get a used Wii for $100.
Yeah, it probably works.
I think the Switch is going to be okay. I mean. Going maybe not in the short run, but in the long run, I think it's going to do what it needs to do, and I think I'm gonna want to get it eventually.
You'll get it for $50 2 years from now. I'm pretty sure.
I do want to play a Zelda game. It's been a very long time, and I feel like I'm in Zelda withdrawals because I didn't play Skyward Sword, so now I really want to play Breath of the Wild.
Well, fortunately, you'll be able to get it on the Wii U.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I want to play Mario Adventure 2006.
Mm-hmm. That looks cool.
2006. It's me, Sonic!
But, yeah, I like the idea of what they got going on with that, and I want to play it. It's just I'm probably going to get a Switch before the year's out, if only because eventually I want to be able to review games on there.
I don't know. But it seems like a cheap plastic piece of crap right now. Yeah. It looks like one of those Tiger games the Switch does. You may get excited for a while, but then you say, oh, this is like, no. I mean, I wonder, here's the thing. If it wasn't, maybe that's it. Maybe the scarcity will make buyers are more scarce.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. You may limit your supply, but then you have to be sure that there's a demand. or else you're just, you know, you want to flood the market. Not, here's the thing, when Sony wants to release a TV, they're not going to make it, oh, well, you know, we're only producing a few until later. No, when you publish electronics, you want to flood the market with that crap, you know? Get as many 3D TVs sold as possible. Look how that did.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo, you're not a toy company. You're not a toy. You may have done playing cards, but you're not a toy company. I want to see the Nintendo playing cards from 1850. I just got to see that.
Yeah. I bet you those are extremely hard to find nowadays.
Oh God, I don't want the actual packs. I just want to see what they looked like. You know, some file photos somewhere out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you can Google it.
You know, I'm wondering if you're in the 1920s, your grandfather put away his toys and you go look through them and there's this pack of Nintendo playing cards. I wonder if you hit the lottery right there. I have mint Nintendo.
Probably.
I have mint Nintendo cards. It's like Action Comics number one.
Yeah.
Even better from the 19th century Nintendo cards. God, can you imagine how much those would be worth?
A mint.
Yeah. You could probably. I wonder how much you could sell it to the Smithsonian Institute. Or heck, forget that. Imagine the Japanese, whatever cultural heritage museums they have. I don't think they would have done our style of playing cards either. I wonder, the most ancient Pokemon cards ever is the first Pikachu.
Mm.
What would an 1880s Pikachu would look like?
Yeah.
Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, or subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. So, yeah, it's not a short episode, but it's not one of our longer ones. I don't know. Not enough news. I'm going to be in PAX in 2 weeks. I'm probably going to have a crap ton of news after that. There's a lot of indie games.
You can definitely Google the playing cards. There's a whole bunch of images on what they look like. So that's pretty interesting. So that way you don't have to go searching and buying something that's probably really expensive and you're not even going to do anything with.
Yeah. So anyways, we will see you next week. It won't be the day before I go. Like I said, in 2 weeks, that's right. I'm an idiot. So anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.